When people first come to the most profound aspects of any great spiritual teaching or any great spiritual tradition, they're looking for control. All of us, through the first portion of our lives, develop the impression that existence is made up of a number of different forms that we can identify. We have the impression that the universe is composed of a number of different things, that our body is yet again another thing in that larger world of things, and that consciousness is a very subtle thing that inhabits the body and moves it through this larger world. In an effort to achieve or attain certain goals, we have the impression that one form influences another form, and that our body influences the world in general. There's a very natural feeling that certain forms are much more pleasant than other forms. So there are certain sights, sounds, touches, tastes, smells, and thoughts that are obviously more pleasant than the general run of things. And there's a very natural urge to pursue that pleasure. It's actually more than just the natural urge to pursue pleasure. It becomes a basic belief that in order to make our life happy, we need to pursue those pleasures in order to reach some kind of fulfillment or completion. We need to cultivate a certain level of pleasure and maintain it. There's also the feeling that we understand existence to some degree. We see apparent forms and we have labels for those forms, and it gives us the impression that we have some understanding of how the universe is composed, that it is made up of these various forms or things. But there's a very essential feeling that we haven't gotten a complete picture of it. We haven't gotten a complete understanding of it. So we have the urge to somehow cultivate more understanding, that if we could understand just a little bit more, we would once again reach some level of completion or fulfillment. Once again, we would have added some level of pleasure to our existence. And in doing so, we would have made ourselves happy. It's also the case that in this sense of existence being made up of a number of separate things, we have the feeling that our body is separate from the rest of the world. And so at times we have a feeling of being separated, isolated, alienated, and anxious regarding our situation in this larger external world or the larger external happening of the universe. At times we feel quite confident, quite secure, and then at other times we feel very lonely, very isolated, very alienated, very confused in regard to our sense of self. So there's a natural urge to move toward those moments that we're feeling confident and whole, we feel that we belong, and we feel that we can really take whatever life offers. So we have this very natural urge to cultivate a sense of self that never feels lonely, never feels isolated, and never feels anxious. And it's with this basic collection of assumptions or impressions that most of us function in life. We have this sense that we're a thing in a world of things. We can influence these things. And in order to find our sense of completion or fulfillment, we need to pursue certain pleasures and maintain them. We need to develop a level of understanding, a very high level of understanding of life, and maintain that. And we need to develop a sense of self that is confident and secure and never feels anxious and lonely. And in this approach to life, we're looking for some kind of system or method or technique in order to accomplish all of this. But there's an essential and inevitable frustration in this functioning. Because as all of us will learn, eventually, the pleasures will always fade. It doesn't matter what pleasant sight, sound, touch, taste, smell, or thought comes along. That pleasure will inevitably fade, and we're left with the feeling that we need to pursue more pleasure, or we just haven't found the right pleasure, the pleasure that's going to stay. We discover that any sense of clarity that we have, any particular insight that we have that leaves us feeling as though we really understand life, that will inevitably fade. And within a relatively short period of time, we will find ourselves feeling very confused about existence. Once again, wondering why it is we can't maintain this sense of clarity. And it doesn't matter what periods of confidence we have, that too inevitably fades. On certain mornings, we jump out of bed and we're raring to go. We think we can take on anything that the world offers. And a few mornings later, we can barely crawl out from underneath the covers because under the covers, it all seems so warm and safe and cozy. And we really don't want to face the external world. It's also the case that no matter what we've investigated, no matter what method or system or technique we've investigated for controlling our lives, in order to establish this ongoing pleasure or ongoing understanding or ongoing sense of confidence, we haven't found anything that offers that. And so we're left wondering where that method is, where is that system, where is that technique that can somehow perfect the world, perfect our lives, so that we do feel that we have reached some level of completion and fulfillment. Now, in this frustration, the essential frustration of trying to attain this pleasure, clarity, and confidence, and time and time again having these things fade back to moments of displeasure, moments of confusion, moments of anxiety, we usually end up having the feeling that there's something wrong with us, that somehow it's working for everyone else, but for me, somehow there must be something intrinsically wrong with me, because I don't seem to feel satisfied. I don't seem to feel complete. I don't seem to feel fulfilled. And at that point, we may begin looking around for something else, some other option. We begin wondering if perhaps we can find this sense of fulfillment or satisfaction somewhere else. We've done all the things that we were told to do. We've gotten an education. We've gotten a job or a career. We've gotten into relationship. We've earned money. We've gotten possessions. And somehow it doesn't seem to be enough. Somehow it doesn't leave us feeling contented. It doesn't leave us feeling that we've somehow come to a sense of completion. So we begin wondering if maybe there's something else out there that we need to investigate. So very naturally, we may begin investigating some of the psychologies or therapies that are presented to us in the world. We have these basic psychologies and therapies that seem to offer the possibility of correcting ourselves. If there's something wrong, we can go into this kind of therapeutic investigation, and in that way we can correct ourselves, we can straighten ourselves out, and in that way we can come to some sense of satisfaction, some sense of completion. And so it is, we may go through a number of these psychologies or therapies in this hope of rearranging our perspective, and in that way coming to some place of rest. And these basic psychologies do allow us the possibility of once again looking at our general perspective, rearranging it in some way, and they do seem to offer a momentary feeling of satisfaction or fulfillment, a sense of achieving something. But it's a lot like rearranging the furniture in a room. No matter how much we rearrange it, and no matter how much we experience a certain level of satisfaction in that new arrangement, it's still basically the same old furniture and the same old room. And so that momentary feeling of new pleasure or satisfaction in the rearrangement fades, like all the other pleasures have faded. So we may begin feeling that, yes, that was fine as far as it went, but it still didn't seem to come to some sense of ultimate completion. So we begin wondering once more if there might be something else out there. And we may inevitably come to some of the great spiritual teachings, the great spiritual traditions. But initially we approach these traditions from what we might call the folk level, the level of understanding that is generally held about these teachings, about these traditions. We may adopt some of the rules that they lay out, the rules for living. We may participate in some of their assemblies or gatherings. We may attempt to practice some of the practices, the spiritual practices that they offer. And in some cases, we may attempt to adopt a particular belief. For in some of these traditions, we're asked to simply believe a certain thing, and in that way, come to some sense of fulfillment. But once again, this only offers so much. There may be a certain excitement in the newness of all of this. There may be a certain level of distraction in investigating it. But once again, it doesn't seem to offer a place of rest. It doesn't leave us feeling as though we've come to some sense of completion. So here it is, we've done all the things that the world is generally asking us to do. We've approached it with the same general approach that everyone else seems to have. We've gone after the education, the career, the relationship, the money, the possessions. We've pursued pleasures. We've pursued understanding. We've pursued the development of a sense of self that is always confident. We've attempted to find a wholeness in that sense of self. We've looked for the general methods and systems and techniques to gain control over our situation and ultimately come to this level of pleasure, clarity, wholeness, and confidence. And yet, in the wee small hours of the night, we still find ourselves feeling anxious, uneasy, empty, isolated, alienated, lonely, confused, and in some cases, quite desperate. And at that point, we may find ourselves drawn or may find ourselves exposed to the more profound aspects of these spiritual traditions, what we might loosely call a non-dual perspective. Now, this non-dual perspective doesn't have to be housed within any particular spiritual tradition. Throughout the apparent centuries, it's also been offered by certain individuals. But within the core teaching of any of the great spiritual traditions, we have what we might loosely call this non-dual perspective. And we will approach this non-dual perspective with our usual method of operation. Once again, we'll come to it looking for a way of cultivating pleasure and maintaining that pleasure. We'll come to it looking for an understanding of existence, an understanding that's going to leave us feeling clear and calm in all the aspects of our life. We'll approach this non-dual perspective with the hope of cultivating a sense of self that always feels whole, always feels confident. And we'll approach this non-dual perspective in the hope of discovering some system or method or technique for accomplishing all of what we're setting out to do, for gaining control over life, a method, a system, a technique that will produce pleasure, will produce clarity, it will produce a confident sense of self. But it's at this point in approaching this non-dual perspective that we come across something radically different. Because this perspective is not offering an ongoing sense of pleasure. It's not offering an understanding of existence. It's not offering a sense of self that will constantly be confident and feel as though it belongs. It's not offering a system or method or technique for gaining control over our existence. It's offering something very different. It's offering a different perspective, a different view of existence. And it's not offering it in any kind of forceful way. It's not saying you have to understand existence in this way. It's not saying, I want you to practice this understanding and you will make yourself happy. It's not offering this perspective in any kind of forceful way. It's not even saying that everyone should look at life in this way. All it does is simply offer a different view. It offers a different perspective. It offers a different approach to life. And in offering this different perspective, in simply laying out a different view of existence, it challenges the most fundamental assumptions that we have made about life. And in order to challenge those assumptions, it simply points to our actual life experience. It asks us to consider if the experience of life that we have supports the assumptions that we've made about existence. And perhaps the most basic aspect of our existence that it asks us to consider is the fact that everything changes. For any one of us that has lived life for an apparent long number of years, we've come to the experience that everything is changing. It doesn't matter what it is, whether it's a sight, a sound, a touch, a taste, a smell, or a thought, a mood, the breath, a body, a house, a tree, a planet, a galaxy, the solar system, or the universe itself. Everything is changing. This is our common experience. This isn't asking us to adopt some kind of strange belief system. It's asking us to simply acknowledge what our experience is, what we already know about life. Not what somebody has to tell us or what somebody has to get us to believe. It asks us to look at what our actual experience is. It doesn't matter what you've attempted to hold on to, whether it's a particular job, a particular relationship, your body, your moods, your thoughts. All of this has changed. Everything is moving and shifting in some way. Everything that we know of has an apparent beginning, it has an apparent aging or changing, and it has an apparent fading away. So, with our body and with our relationships and with our career, even if it seems to have the sense of being the same basic body, the same basic relationship, and the same basic career, from moment to moment, it has shifted and changed. One moment feeling quite pleasant, the next moment feeling not so pleasant. And in situations with our thoughts and our moods, the thoughts and the moods eventually fade away totally, moving on to other thoughts and other moods. And in certain circumstances, maybe that career moves on to a different career. Maybe that relationship moves on to a different relationship. And we all know that at some point, this body is going to fade away. If we look at life with its rivers flowing, its seasons shifting, bodies aging, cities transforming, the various movements of the earth, the turning of the earth, the shifting of our thoughts and moods, the rhythms of our relationships. The stories that scientists tell us of the pulsing of atoms and molecules. The stories that astronomers tell us of watching solar systems arising into existence and galaxies blipping out of existence. They see flashes of light in the far regions of the universe, and they tell us that that's an entire galaxy flipping out of existence. If we really consider what our experience has been, we come to realize that life is movement. Or perhaps we come to realize that life is movement. We come to realize that whatever form we can identify is moving on to some other appearance. Whatever it is, it has an apparent beginning, an apparent aging, and an apparent fading away. We've attempted to hold on to so many things in so many different ways, and whatever we've attempted to hold on to has shifted in some way. It's moved and changed and moved on to something else. This is our common experience. This is our general experience. This is what we already know about life from our own experience. That life is formless. It doesn't have a particular form. Even the most stable looking object or thing or form is changing in some way. The Himalayan mountains, if we investigate it, are still growing 1 inch every year. We have a mountain range here in Manitoba that's very old, and at one point it was very dramatic, but now it's simply a collection of large hills and will eventually be flat land. The house we're sitting in. We all know that if it isn't maintained, it will grow old, it will turn to dust, and it will eventually blow away. And none of us has the impression that it will stay brand new for 500 years and then overnight it will turn to dust and blow away. Instead, we have the impression that it's growing old right now, that it's falling apart in very minute ways. And even though we don't see each and every small shift and change, we have the impression that it's growing old right now, even as I speak. Right now, it has no specific form. It's already moving on. It's always moving on to something else. Life is formless. Whatever appears to be presenting itself in this moment is moving on to some other appearance. It's also the case that for every one of us, when this big event, this moving, shifting event of existence first presents itself, there isn't any sense of understanding it in any way. Nobody has the impression that a newborn baby arrives with a storyline. Nobody has the impression that a newborn baby leaves the womb thinking, oh, there's mom and there's the doctor and I've just been born and I can hardly wait to get a cookie. Nobody has that impression. If we ask an infant what life is all about, if we ask a baby to explain why he or she is doing the things that he or she is doing, we're not going to get an answer. For the infant, there isn't even any question. It's just blah, blah, blah. If there was a dog barking next to you asking this question, for the infant, there really wouldn't be any huge difference in those sounds. For the infant, there's just simply a buzzing, pulsing, swirling event. There isn't any sense that anyone's doing it. It's just happening. We all know that it takes years to learn the labels for existence and to be able at some point to string them together into some kind of storyline. We all know that. We all know that if we live in one country, that has one language, we get a certain set of sounds, a certain set of labels for existence. And if we lived in another country with another language, we would get a different set of sounds for existence, a different set of labels for existence. If we all agreed, it could be any set of sounds. I can talk to you or speak to you of a body, of a chair, of consciousness. But if we agreed, we don't have to call it chair, body, and consciousness. We could call it Blix, flute, and wazzle. And if I spoke to you about a chair and a body and consciousness, you would have the impression that you understood life. But if I started speaking to you of Blix, flute, and wazzle, you would have the feeling that I was speaking gibberish. Those words have no basic meaning. And in this, we might come to realize that the words chair, body, and consciousness also have no intrinsic meaning, no basic meaning. They are also gibberish. These sounds are simply a functional tool. These labels get attached to an apparent form, and we can function in the world with this sense of apparent form and these labels. We can ask for a glass of water. We can ask somebody to pass the salt. We can ask somebody directions to a certain place, a certain form. But if we really consider this carefully, we may come to realize that we can't ask these sounds to explain existence. Because a meaningless sound attached to a form that doesn't actually exist, we already know that all the forms are changing. And so the appearance of form is just a passing appearance. It's not the basic reality. A meaningless sound attached to a form that doesn't actually exist doesn't explain anything about anything. If we go into this a little more deeply, we can also acknowledge that when we were in the womb, we weren't doing anything. We weren't in there deciding to grow larger. We weren't in there with a little chart and a little stopwatch thinking, I've got to get out of here in 9 months' time. Got to time this carefully. We grew larger in the womb, and we eventually left the womb as a movement of nature. Once again, if we asked a newborn baby, why are you doing the things you do? Even if the baby could understand that question, the baby doesn't have a sense of doing anything. Everything is just happening on its own. There is no sense of existing. There is no sense of a world that we've entered into. There's just a big, mysterious, buzzing, swirling event. There are no labels for it. There's no fundamental sense of form. It takes a long time for a baby to be able to focus on apparent forms and learn to give them labels, to come up with a storyline. And for the baby, there isn't any sense of doing the event of life. For every one of us, this was the case. We weren't deciding to grow larger. We weren't planning to start walking. We weren't planning to start thinking. We weren't planning to start talking. All of this unfolded as a movement of nature. So this great movement of all the things, the fact that whatever thing we've been able to identify is moving on to some other appearance, is moving on to some other expression. We generally call that the movement of nature. And we all know that as an infant, we weren't planning to become the person that we are. We weren't planning to be the happening that we are. We weren't deciding to have the particular body that we have. We weren't deciding to have the certain needs that we have. We weren't deciding to have the interests that we have. We weren't deciding to have the talents and the abilities that we have. All of this simply unfolded as a movement of nature. This great formless movement of existence. And if we really acknowledge this in a very open way, we can come to realize that even now, when we appear to make a decision, if life demands a certain decision be made, then that decision has to be made with the particular body and the particular brain that we are. And we haven't created that body and that brain. That decision has to unfold from the basic needs that we have, the basic interests that we have, the basic concerns that we have, the basic abilities that we have, none of which we create. All of this has been offered in the movement of nature. So, in this having another look at our lives, having another look at what our actual experience of existence is, we may start to realize that we're not dealing with a bunch of things. The universe isn't made up of a bunch of things. We're not dealing with a situation that we can understand. Our storylines aren't telling us what any of this actually is. We're not dealing with a situation that we're doing. The very happening of our being is not something that we're doing. And in this examination, this simple acknowledgement of what we all commonly know, in this simple acknowledgement of our common experience, we may come to realize the most basic perspective of any of the great spiritual traditions, any of the great spiritual teachings. There is only a great, inexplicable, formless happening presenting itself. And throughout the apparent centuries, many people have attempted to point to this very basic fact of our existence. Some have called it the Great Spirit. Some have called it the flow of nature. Some have called it the river of life or the ocean of existence. Some have called it energy. Scientists will say the basic happening of our existence is simply the movement of energy. Now they're telling us that even the space that we see is not empty space. It's something called dark energy. Why is it dark? It's just very difficult to see. But they're saying that there are indications that even that empty space is simply energy, this movement. Life is movement, this great inexplicable formless happening. Some have called it movement. One of the teachers that I used to connect with on a regular basis, Jiddu Krishnamurti, used to say, we never come to realize this movement, that it is one movement. So Some will get poetic and call it the dance of the universe, and some will simply call it the universe. The literal meaning of the word universe is undivided turning, one movement, undivided turning. Some have just given this great inexplicable formless happening a particular name, like Yahweh, or God, or Tao, or Atman. It doesn't really matter what you call it. Whatever the word for it, these words simply point to this great, formless, inexplicable dance, this inexplicable happening, this formless presence presenting itself. Within all of these great spiritual teachings, we often find something that we could loosely call meditation. The word meditation is used in a very broad range of circumstances. So someone talking about meditation might be talking about counting the breath. Others might be talking about repeating a certain phrase in their minds, some aphorism. Others might be talking about holding a certain image in their mind, a mandala of some kind. Others might be talking about repeating a certain sound, a mantra. Within these traditions, there are hundreds of variations that fall loosely under this name meditation, this word meditation. But within all of these traditions, there's a meditation that's considered to be the most profound meditation. And in that, you're invited to sit or to lie down and do absolutely nothing. Because if we make no effort to do anything at all, if we sit down or lie down and make no effort to do anything at all, we may realize that everything happens anyway. The entire process that we are goes on presenting itself in its own way, in its own time. The heart goes on beating, the breath goes on breathing, the moods go on mooding, the thoughts go on thinking. Particular needs arise, particular interests arise, particular concerns arise. Some of this moves into an action, some of it doesn't. And so life flows. The rhythm of that flowing is clarity and confusion, joy and sorrow, security and anxiety, a sense of confidence and anxiety. The happening of existence has no particular form. It never was a bunch of things. It is instead movement, a dance, a flowing, always expressing itself in a different way. Whatever seems to be appearing in this moment is moving on to some other appearance. And if we get stuck on the notion that it has to be something in particular, we're going to suffer. If we attempt to understand it as something in particular, we're going to suffer. If we feel that our mood has to be something in particular, we're going to suffer. If we sit down and make no effort at all, we're not going to remain sitting for the rest of our life. We will get up and go to the toilet. We will get up and go get something to eat. We will get up and leave the room. We will get up and associate with the world at large. We will go to work. We will visit friends. We will connect with family. And we will do that through the only needs and interests and concerns, the only body and brain, the only interests and abilities that we are, the only interests and abilities that nature presents, that this great unformed dance of existence presents. We don't exist as anything apart from this great mysterious movement, this great mysterious presence, this great unformed, inexplicable happening. And so it is that in this very simple acknowledgement of what our experience is, what our common experience is, what we all already know, we may come to realize that our old sense of existence, our old perspective, doesn't fit our experience. That what we thought was a consciousness in a body, a consciousness moving that body through a world of things, directing the body, accomplishing certain things, that perspective doesn't fit the actual experience of life. And that if we really acknowledge what our common experience is, if we really acknowledge what we already know, what all of us commonly experience, we come to realize that life itself is a movement that has no particular form. That this happening, when it first presents itself, it contains no understanding. And that what we think is understanding is simply attaching meaningless sounds to forms, appearances of form that don't actually even exist. There is instead this great mysterious event, this great mysterious dance. And if we sit down and make no effort at all, the whole dance presents itself. The process that we are continues. It expresses itself. It presents itself. Now, we don't have to try to make some effort to constantly do nothing. But it's only when we're obviously making no effort at all that it becomes obvious everything is presenting itself. And as I said, we will get up and go to the toilet. We will get up and go find something to eat. We will get up and leave the room. We will get up and associate with the world at large. If we have to work, we'll work. We will seek out certain entertainments. We will associate with certain friends. Not because we're directing that, but because our life is a compulsory event. It's a great mysterious dance, and we don't exist as anything apart from that dance. And further, if we continue to acknowledge what our actual experience is, we may come to realize that this event contains an inherent sense of well-being. When we were an infant, even though there were moments of disgruntlement, there were the moments that we were crying and kicking, in general, life contained a sense of well-being. Children don't have to try to make themselves feel happy. There's an intrinsic sense that life is a magical event. Even now, with any of us, if we have a good night's sleep, when we're not making any effort to accomplish anything at all, in that deep sleep, when we're not trying to figure life out, we're not trying to pursue anything, we're not trying to attain anything, we're not trying to hold anything still, in the first moments of awakening, there's an incredible sense of well-being after a night of deep sleep. In those first moments, there's an intrinsic sense of well-being. We didn't create it. It's simply there. We may come to realize that our basic grief in life, our basic suffering in life, is not that life presents difficult situations or unpleasant situations. Our most fundamental sense of suffering comes from the notion that it shouldn't be presenting these things. Our sense of suffering comes from this strange fantasy that we have, that we understand existence. And not only do we understand it, we know that it shouldn't be what it is. But not one of us has any real understanding of what's happening in this moment. It was an absolute mystery when it first presented itself. It's still an absolute mysterious event. An inexplicable, formless happening presenting itself. To say that it shouldn't be presenting itself the way it does present itself is some incredible fantasy that produces grief. It produces suffering. Once again, in acknowledging what our common experience is, what we already know, we may come to realize this great mysterious dance of existence, the great spirit, the flow of nature, the river of life, the unformed ocean of existence, the moving, shifting, ephemeral energy that life is, the movement. And in resting with it, we may come to realize the fullness of that event, that inherent sense of well-being. We may come once more to that sense of magic and wonder at its presentation, all of it presenting itself, presenting us, presenting an apparent life, presenting an apparent life journey, when in fact it's simply this great mysterious presence. We may come to realize that life itself is an ongoing magical dance of ever-changing appearances. And that we're part of the dance. We may come to the wonder of this presentation. We don't have to be concerned with what it's going to present. We don't have to be concerned with that movement. Whatever it seems to be now is on its way to another appearance. We're part of the presentation. Whatever needs, interests, and concerns we are in this moment, it's on its way to something else. At age 4, It was a certain set of needs, interests, and concerns. At age 10, it was another set of needs, interests, and concerns. At age 15, another set. At age 20, another arrangement of needs, interests, and concerns. And whatever it is now, it's already on its way to something else. It is already complete in each and every moment. There is only this dance. Everything I've presented here today could be a bunch of crap. And it's not my place to convince you that this is the way life is. I'm simply asking you to consider what it is that you know from your own experience. What is it that you find in your experience? This is simply for your consideration.